See, Srila Prabhupada talking a little bit more about this atheistic philosophy that the life symptoms just come from matter. Let's go to chapter 7, text 15. So this is another verse where Krishna is directly talking about atheistic philosophy. So it's a very famous text from Bhagavad Gita. Namam diskritano mudha prapadyante naradama maya pratigyana asuram bhavamashrita. And the translation given by Srila Prabhupada is, those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. So this phrase, asuram bhavam ashrita, asura means demonic or atheistic. Actually, this word asura is very much like the English word atheistic, because you can see they're just the grammatic, I mean, the structure of the words is very much, you know, the same. Theos comes from Greek, means God, and the prefix a means not, you know, or against. So in Sanskrit you have sura, you know, which means God or godly, and then you have the negative prefix a, you know, same thing. You know, so asura, atheist, very closely related words. So you see in the translation, and then bhavam means nature. So asura can mean demon, it can also mean atheist. So in his translation, you know, Srila Prabhupada says, who partake of the atheistic nature of demons. You know, he describes this group of people. So if we go to the very end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada describes there are four classes of people who don't surrender to Krishna. So if we go to the very end of the purport, you know, there's a number four there, where Srila Prabhupada explains this class of atheists, those who take on the atheistic nature of demons. So Srila Prabhupada explains this, the last class of Dushkriti is called Asuram Bhavam Ashrita, or those of demonic principles. This class is openly atheistic. Some of them argue that the Supreme Lord can upon this material world, but they are unable to give any tangible reasons as to why not. There are others who make him subordinate to the impersonal feature, although the opposite is declared in the Gita. Envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the atheist will present a number of illicit incarnations manufactured in the factory of his brain. Such persons, whose very principle of life is to decry the personality of Godhead, cannot surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Sri Yamunacharya Albandru of South India said, O my Lord, you are unknowable to persons involved with atheistic principles, despite your uncommon qualities, features, and activities, despite your personalities being confirmed by all the revealed scriptures in the quality of goodness, and despite your being acknowledged by the famous authorities renowned for their depth of knowledge in the transcendental science and situated in the godly qualities. So there's some very interesting information here being given about, you know, the psychology of the atheistic person. This commentary by Sri Yamunacharya Albandru is very important. It says, despite all the evidence that there is, you know, for God, you know, these people with this atheistic mentality, they can't accept it. And despite all of this evidence that's given by God's uncommon qualities, features, and activities, you know, despite all of this being confirmed by the revealed scriptures, and despite all of this being acknowledged by the great authorities in the line of disciplic succession. You know, the persons with the atheistic mentalities just cannot appreciate this. So this is Krishna, he's explaining here that, you know, these atheists are among the category of personalities who, you know, can't surrender up to him. And in his purport, you know, Srila Prabhupada is using the word, you know, envious, you know, describing an envious mentality to describe, to characterize the atheist. So there's some additional information about the mentality of the atheistic person given in, there's this one verse, Vita Raga Baya Krodha. Let me see which verse that is here. Should be, let's see, 4:10, chapter 4, text 10. So in this text 10 of chapter 4, Vita Raga Baya Krodha, Srila Prabhupada translates this, being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Now these people who attain transcendental love for Krishna are ones who have overcome these defects of raga or attachment, baya, fear, and krodha, anger. And Srila Prabhupada gives a very interesting analysis of this. So the first class, they can't really understand, you know, the personality of Godhead because of their material attachment. In his purport, he says, as described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. So this psychology is going to lead us to, we'll return to this in our discussion of the universal form level of God realization, because if we go on through this explanation here, then we'll see that, you know, Srila Prabhupada is saying that such people, generally, if they think of God at all, they can only conceive of God as sort of the universal form. But if we go on further, it's, you know, in the purport, it says, further, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all. They become angry. You know, this is what he says, being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculations, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause. That those are the people who are fearful of individual spiritual existence. And then finally, this angry category. And some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. So, So this sort of helps us understand the, you know, the psychology of one kind of atheistic person. I would say when I was in college, I would have had to have fit into this category. You know, just became angry, frustrated. You know, so many different ideas. You know, taught this. You know, I was taught these ideas when I was a child, and then now, you know, hearing so many different philosophies in college, and none of them really seem satisfying, and then ultimately you just want to disbelieve in everything. You know, and then as it says here, take, you know, shelter of some kind of intoxication, you know, or something like that, which, you know, I could say, you know, I did for a time, and you know, there's a perfect description of a certain kind of, you know, atheist. There are many different kinds of atheists, but this is sort of explaining how atheism is related to a certain kind of emotions of anger and hopelessness and frustration. Now, ultimately, the, you know, if we trace back all of these emotional sources of atheism or, you know, opposition to God, there's another verse. It's the Ichcha Dvesha verse. Let's see, where is that? 7:27, chapter 7, text 27. And to one extent or another, this will apply to anyone who isn't at, you know, the topmost level of pure devotional service. They're going to be affected by, you know, these twin diseases of desire and hatred. But particularly for the atheists, these emotions are very prominent. They're very, very prominent. And we can just read this and see what Srila Prabhupada is saying, what Krishna is saying here. Ichcha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani samoham sarge yanti parantapa. Translation, O Scion of Bharata. So how you pronounce that word? Scion? Scion. O Scion of Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. Purport. The real constitutional position of the living entity is that of subordination to the Supreme Lord, who is pure knowledge. When one is deluded into separation from this pure knowledge, he becomes controlled by illusory energy and cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illusory energy is manifested in the duality of desire and hate. Due to desire and hate, the ignorant person wants to become one with the Supreme Lord and envies Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pure devotees, who are not deluded or contaminated by desire and hate, can understand that Lord Sri Krishna appears by his internal potencies. But those who are deluded by duality and nescience think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is created by material energies. This is their misfortune. So this is the mentality of the atheists. They recognize the concept of God. You know, they can't ignore that because they see that the concept of God is there. But they think this concept of God is just something that has arisen in the minds of deluded people in this world, you know, by some process of evolution. You know, they think maybe a long time ago there were some apes, and the apes that had the idea that maybe there was some supreme God had helped them work more closely together, you know, and therefore they survived and the other apes didn't, and, you know, therefore, you know, we have this idea of God. So this is, but what this comes from is desire to enjoy oneself separately from God, without any restriction, without any control. And then also envy. It's a related concept, that if you see someone enjoying nicely, then you envy them. You want to take their position. So if we look at the Vedic literatures, we see that these are the emotions that underlie these atheistic ideas. There's envy and hatred, desire and hatred. So you had a question, comment?
God as a crutch.
Yes.
You're saying that's something to hold on to. It's left to punish or something.
Yes.
It actually is. They are the ruler in anger. They see us as bewildered and deluded, so we're holding on to thin air mythology. God, our concept of God, and it's actually the other way around. They are the ones that are deluded.
Yes. Well, this is the fundamental. I mean, this is ultimately this is what everything comes down to. Every kind of discussion is going to come down to this. Like the simple fact: is there some higher controlling power in the universe or not? Practically every discussion, if you trace it back, it's going to come down to this. Simple point. And what it really comes down to is this question: am I God, or is somebody else God? it really does come down to this. And basically, there's the idea that I'm God, we're all God, or like Krishna's God. There is some supreme controlling power. And ultimately, there's all of these philosophies. They grow out of these basic emotional responses to the existence of God. Actually, I'm going to bring tomorrow some quotations where Srila Prabhupada explains, and Krishna also explains this in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says that actually all these philosophies, even the atheistic philosophies, are given by Krishna. Krishna gives the intelligence. Oh, you want to forget me? Well, I'll give you the intelligence to interpret this verse of Bhagavad Gita this way, so you can think it means it supports your atheistic philosophy. So Krishna says, Ye yatamam prapadyante, tams tataiva bhajamyaham. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So this, actually this Ye yatamam prapadyante verse is, it sort of underlies this whole presentation. That according to how we relate to Krishna, either consciously or unconsciously, then Krishna responds. He reveals himself to a greater or lesser degree. Even to the atheist, he reveals himself in the form of time and death. And to this pure devotee, he reveals himself in his blissful, two-armed form, playing his flute, engaging in blissful pastimes with them. So he also engages in his pastimes with the atheist. Of course, some of them, he confronts them personally and kills them, which is his great mercy, because many of them get liberated by that. But for your ordinary run-of-the-mill atheist, even Krishna appears ultimately in the form of time and death to show them that they aren't supreme, that there is some supreme power in the universe. So, and then there's also the verse where Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham hriti sanavishto mata smritir gyanam apohanam cha. I'm situated in everyone's heart, and from me comes memory, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So, if the atheist wants to forget Krishna, then Krishna will give the intelligence, how to do that. Of course, then you've got Krishna's devotees who are trying to wake up, even the atheist. So Krishna also cooperates with them. But That's why it's sometimes said that the devotees of the Lord are more merciful than the Lord himself. Because you know, Krishna will just reciprocate with the person. Yeah, but even if the person happens to be an atheist, some devotee may try to have some mercy upon them and give them some give them some prasadam or let them hear the holy name or something that will benefit them in this life or the next. So, does anyone else have anything to comment? Yes, Lochan?
In terms of science, you cannot deny the existence of God. Because you don't assume that you try to deny God, that it's like a God. If we say that, I'm absolutely sure there is no absolute truth, then it's not absolute truth.
Yeah, that's their version of the absolute truth.
Like a purpose in terms of science. Actually, I heard one time, there is not really atheism. There is like agnosticism. We don't know about it. It seems that the scientists, they cannot deny the existence of God, right? They don't deny it.
Some of them do. Or some of them will say, well, we can't concern ourselves with the question of God or no God. Therefore, we're just going to explain everything materially. They'll say, some of them are openly atheistic, and they'll say, well, yes, I'm doing science to get rid of the idea of God. Some of them will say like that. Some of them will say, well, yes, I believe in God, but God did it. God did everything only in the way that we can say it happened by science. In other words, Big Bang universe, life from chemicals, Darwinian evolution. They say, yes, we're very saintly people. We believe in God, but God did it like this. And the fact that that goes against what God says in all those scriptures, well, that's a problem for the religionists to deal with. They do like that. And basically, we even find that the heads of religion, sometimes they go along with this idea, and then they say, oh yes, well, what about your scriptures? And they say, well, I think the Catholic Church took the position, the Bible tells us how to go to heaven, not how the heavens go. In other words, but we can't take that position. Keshava Priya, you were going to say something? Yes. Oh, actually, there's this is something I mentioned in Radadesh in a seminar last year when I was giving arguments against Darwinism. So, if you look in Brahma Samhita, you'll find a description of 64 arts that the gopis and Radharani engage in the spiritual world for the pleasure of Krishna, and one of them is. Mlecha, if I remember correctly, this is in the Bhaktisiddhanta edition of Brahma Samhita. It's in one of the purports. You can look it up there. There's the list of the 64 arts, and one of them is Mlecha, Kutarka, Vikalpana, which means that one of the arts is to invent different atheistic arguments and then argue against them. Which we see that Srila Prabhupada took pleasure in doing. He would go on these morning walks with his disciples, and he would always be saying, all right, so they say this. And he seemed to enjoy it very much. The scientists say this, and what do you say? he would do that. So I thought that was very interesting, since that's one of my main services, and sometimes it seems very dry. I can sometimes take some solace in the idea that it's actually... maybe a perverted reflection of one of the spiritual arts. Mlecha, Kutarka, Vikalpana. Okay, time to stop for today. So tomorrow we will continue with our examination of the phenomenon of atheism as described by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. We're coming up to some of the... We haven't even touched the 16th chapter yet, the divine and the demoniac nature, which where Krishna really gets into it. So if you want to look into that 16th chapter or any of the other things that are described here, Please feel free to do so, and we'll continue tomorrow. Thank you. Bakhtin N., did you get from the office one of these? So today, we're going to finish up section one, the non-existence of God. Yeah, that's one level of God realization that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita. And I thought we might start out perhaps by recounting, telling any stories that we may have had about encounters with atheists. I think the first day we were talking about some of us who at one point in our lives were atheists ourselves. I've had some interesting encounters with people who don't believe in the existence of God. Sometimes they can even be actually more open than people who do believe in God. I had this experience once in Los Angeles when I was preaching at, every year they have a big fair in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles County Fair, with huge place. It's set up over many square miles, and you know, everyone has, you know, there's carnival there. So the devotees, for many years, I don't know if they're still doing it, but for many years they were, you know, setting up a booth at this fair. You know, they would have a kirtan stage and a prasadam booth, and then some book displays, you know, book tables, and exhibits. So one day I was there at these exhibits, and it seemed all day long I was running into these very hostile Christian sorts of people. And typically, you know, I'd be standing at the book table, and then someone would come up in a very friendly way. Oh, hello, how are you? You know, how are you doing? And this and that. And, you know, they'd talk to you for some time, and then after some time they'd say, but what about Jesus Christ? And what about God? And this and that. And, you know, then they just sit there and take up your time, you know, just, you know, very, well, I think maybe you've all encountered them. So finally, at the end of the day, I was very tired. You know, it was dark. And this group of young people came up. You know, I could see they had crosses on. And, you know, they came up and, you know, they said, hi, how are you? And I'm kind of being very, you know, like not wanting to talk to them so much. And finally I just asked them, well, yeah, I just want to see, you know, just come right up in front and just ask them. I mean, instead of going through this whole 5 or 10 minutes of, you know, pretending, you know, let's find out who you really are. So I asked them, are you Christians? And said, no, we're Satan worshipers. And I said, oh, thank goodness. and they actually turned out to be quite friendly. You know, they took books and things like that. So who knows what might have happened to them. But so does anybody else have any encounters with atheists? You ever met any atheists in your preaching? Anyone? Yes?
Same incident happened
with you.
Yeah.
How and what circumstance?
Anyhow, they want to talk more and more. Mm-hmm. As much as you want to avoid, they want more and more. And I pray to God to help you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this.
So none of you have ever met any atheists in the course of your preaching?
Yes, of course.
Okay, Ezra, what happened to you?
It was just a friend of mine who is a confirmed atheist, you know, and being buddies, being friends as it were, you know, acquaintances from school. You know, after a certain time we meet up 10 years down the line, and I was She came out and you're preaching, and well, we basically got in each other's cases quite hard, you know, after a while, and it actually became abusive, you know, because I've had some strong arguments against his arguments because of the very thinly founded arguments of, well, he's like a scientist, he puts his faith in science and matter.
Well, see, that's a very important point, that they're putting their faith in something.
Yeah. I defeated him on certain points, but with this specific friend, he wouldn't concede, as it were.
He wouldn't concede.
Even with the blatant logic and sanity, as it were, you're giving him, that he's coming from a very... His science is thin, but he still would not concede to his extent of fanaticism that he got across with me. You know?
Yeah, well, Krishna gives them that faith. Yeah. Krishna gives it to them. He'll give them the intelligence to ignore all your arguments, you know, even very good ones. That was the quote that we were hearing from the Yamunacharya, we were reading yesterday. You know, that even though there's so much evidence, and Krishna will give them the intelligence to ignore it, if that's their desire. Yes.
I was just reading books at the university a little while ago. I met a physicist, a student of physics. Kind of intelligent, so I talked to him for a little while. And just based on some simple points that I read in my Origins magazine, they never showed any evidence of how they could produce life in chemicals. How about it? Someone mentions it's like a post-data check. Mm-hmm. And just based on some simple arguments, he actually came to a point where he conceded that physics could never explain the absolute truth just because trying to examine it from a new place and time.
That's very good. Because that shows, this is one of the points, that we make here. It's like how this philosophy can be, countered. And we've got two things here: strong logical arguments, and the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. So, anyways, I'm happy to hear that. I wrote most of those articles in that Origins magazine, along with Sataputta Prabhu, and so. I'm happy to hear that some devotees are getting some good use from it. Actually, if you do know those arguments, you can shake their faith and their materialism a little bit. I found that once I was preaching at a school, and there was some meeting, and then some students were trying to argue, yes, well, life does come from chemicals. And there's this one devotee, he kind of made some... gave some arguments against them, and they couldn't answer, and they were kind of like flustered. They didn't know. Says, "Well, our teacher knows. we may not be able to defeat you, but our teacher, if he were here, he could defeat you." So the devotee said, "Well, I'll bring him in too. We'll bring him next time." But it has its effect. When people they actually if they're a little bit pious, but simply they think they've been convinced logically, there's no God and things like that. If somebody can actually give them some good reasons to think, well, everything doesn't happen just by chance and by matter, and maybe there is some higher controller in the universe, that can actually have an effect if they're a little bit pious. And simply have been, convinced by some kind of bad reason and logic and argument. If you give them some good reason, logic and argument, that can influence people. Yeah, Veda Vyas.
I was after the demolition of the Communist Party in Russia.
Uh-huh.
I was surprised a few years later, just a couple of years ago, I saw these people distributing their communist thing. The communist, newspaper in Seattle, and basically they were just doing their thing. I didn't speak much to them because I just kind of approached, kind of in a mild way, and I could see they were like kind of barking more or less. I just kind of disappear from the scene.
Well, that's one way to deal with them. You avoid the Krishna says you make, you develop your attachment for Krishna, make friendship with the devotees, preach to the innocent, and avoid the envious.
I must say it gives me more determination to distribute books, because I was thinking, how can they distribute this?
Just by seeing their example.
Yeah, I became a little.
Actually, Prabhupada once said that in India. He said this communist idea has spread all over India simply because they distributed their books here. You know, the Russians brought their books, translated them into English and all the Indian language, and spread it all over. So he said, why can't we do the same thing with Krishna consciousness? Because I had an interesting experience. Like, I wrote this book, Forbidden Archaeology, and I started it in 1984. And I would have never dreamed what actually happened a few years later. That like last year, I went to Moscow, and in Pravda, which used to be the communist newspaper, they published a half-page article about this book, Forbidden Archaeology, saying it's very good. sometimes Krishna does some strange things with the atheist, turns the situation completely around. Yes, Dr. Chris?
I find that in distributing books, when you're talking to an atheist, that most of them, they don't really know, they just say that they're atheists, and they're not, a lot of them really are, or maybe because they don't have much knowledge about anything, so they just deny the fact. But a lot of them that I speak to, too, that are, they say, well, they're strong atheists and stuff like that. So you can counteract their argument by, speaking on a basis of, knowledge, knowledge is, this isn't Hare Krishna knowledge, or the atheist knowledge, or this kind of knowledge, And in that way, some people, they can, if you don't have, a sectarian thing, this is religion or something, it's basically just knowledge, they can soften up with it.
Yeah, actually, once I wrote an article in Back to Godhead magazine based on Krishna's statement, abandon all varieties of religion. because that's what most people are against. Organized, ritualistic, dogmatic, sectarian religion. They don't like it. But Krishna doesn't like it either. Because he says, abandon all that. And just, because what Krishna is going after is not simply like the belief in the ritual, but the actual experience. That's what Krishna consciousness actually delivers, an actual tangible experience of love of God, of the soul and of God. Of course, there's some method to come to that point, but the ultimate goal of it is to go beyond what most people don't really like. Yes, Keshava, Priya?
The best kind of atheists in the religious departments of the universities, actually, because they're the ones that know the arguments, against theology and stuff like that. Because nowadays people don't study theology anymore because they want knowledge of God. They just search around and play with different kinds of ideas, and they're the ones that are difficult to
do. Yeah, actually, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who is now studying to get a PhD in religious studies at a university in Texas, I was in Dallas a few months ago, and I talked to him, and he was saying, said most of the people who are in these religious studies departments, they're atheists. He says they don't start out that way. He says they wind up hearing all this nonsense from these professors, they become atheists. Which is why Srila Prabhupada wanted, the devotees should be the professors of religion in the university. So actually there's some serious effort like that going on now. You have Hridayananda Maharaj and these other devotees who are trying to organize an institute of Vaishnava studies connected with the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. It's one of the most famous religion schools in the world, you know, just so they can start to train up devotees to be, you know, professors of religion and get some theists back in the religion departments. Yeah.
Actually, when I was in Berkeley, I met some of the students that are in Maharaj's classes.
Oh, he's teaching Sanskrit and Bhagavad Gita, right?
Yeah, in his Bhagavad Gita class, they were really impressed, you know, the Orthodox Christian. All the results of the people attending his classes were just blown away.
Yeah, so that's what the devotees are meant to do. I can also say at this science conference in Calcutta, you know, I had some encounters with some scholars. There's one from Berkeley. He's in the cognitive studies department, you know, the department that studies, you know, consciousness and things like that. And he was saying, he said to me, and he was raised, like many of us, a Catholic, and then kind of gave it up and became an atheist. And he said, he's had some association with the devotees, you know, the BI devotees there in Berkeley, and he came to this conference, of course. But you know, he said the Krishna conscious philosophy to him is the most logical one that he's ever heard, and it's kind of given him like the impetus to at least consider, you know, once more that there is a, you know, like a personal God, you know, that, you know, he could, you know, develop a relationship with. So even to get somebody to consider like that, you know, it's quite a victory for, you know, the process of Krishna consciousness. And there was this other professor, it's like Gregory Benford, there's a famous conversation between, you know, Srila Prabhupada and him. He's a physicist. Sort of little seemed like, you know, he's a skeptical rationalist, you know, and which means that's another word for atheist, really. But, you know, he went to the conference there, and there's this one devotee, Brahmatirtha, I think,
yeah.
Gave him a set of Java beads, you know. So actually I met him again in Bombay, this professor, and we were, he wanted to go for a walk along the beach in Bombay, so I went with him. And he had these, and then later on, you know, he showed me, he had these Java beads that, you know, Brahmatirtha gave him. He wanted to know, now how do you say this mantra? you know, how do you say it? Hare Krishna, you know, so. But this is the second thing here, is the mercy of Krishna and his devotees, you know, that will just, you know, give these people such, you know, give them the opportunities to, you know, make some advancement despite, you know, what they may be thinking in their minds. So, anyways, that's... So I thought we'd just open... And there's something here I want to read. It's one kind of atheism is, you know, the Mayavadi sort of atheism. So in this lecture, again, that Srila Prabhupada gave in Gorakhpur on February 15th, 1971, he said, Srila Prabhupada's, you know, describing how Krishna gives people the intelligence, you know, to, you know, become atheists. He says there, you'll find among them, you know, the Mayavadis, very, very learned men, very, very good scholars. They can quote, they're intelligent men, and Krishna gives them intelligence also that you misuse this verse in this way because you want. You know, Krishna is sitting within the heart of everyone. So the Mayavadi philosopher wants to kill God or Krishna. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. They want to make Krishna as zero or Krishna as Nirakara. So Krishna also gives them intelligence. Yes, you just put forward this logic, that logic, that logic, and you prove. Then Prabhupada goes on to say, so Krishna gives you the intelligence. Yes, you put this forward, put forward this logic, that logic. He says he'll even give them, you know, the ability to yes, you quote this verse in that way, and to prove that there is no God or Krishna is zero. So ultimately, in all of these levels of God realization, from the non-existence of God up to the highest level of God realization, it's actually Krishna within the heart reciprocating with the individual soul and giving them like the intelligence to do what it is they want to do. Yeah? Yes, the non-existence of God. Yeah, the negative side. Yeah, that's the bottom end of it. That's the very end of it. Because Srila Prabhupada said even the atheists, they're going to realize there's nothing but God to realize. Krishna says, "Aham sarvasya prabhavo, mata sarvam pravartate." It's all coming from me. So that really, there's nothing but God to realize. So the atheist, they want to negate the existence of God, but even then, they're relating to the idea of God in a negative way. And Krishna gives them the intelligence to do that. He gives them the intelligence to forget and to make elaborate arguments and the whole thing. Of course, there's this one example that Prabhupada gives of sometimes there's the thief. There's the householder, or you can even say there's the devotee, who wants to save, not get their shoes stolen. And then there's somebody who wants to steal the shoes. So Krishna's got to decide, Krishna's fulfilling everyone's desires, so sometimes Krishna has to make adjustment. So there's these atheists, who want to destroy God or make God zero. And then there are devotees, especially Lord Chaitanya's devotees, who want to give everyone Krishna's mercy, and they even make elaborate plans to entangle even the atheist in the network of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So Krishna's devotees can be more merciful than Krishna himself sometime in trying to deliver these people. Another comment, Veda Vyas?
You mentioned that your experience with the Satanists.
Yeah.
Would you consider them atheists?
Well, as I said in the beginning, there are many kinds of atheists that are described in the Vedic literature. One is your kind of your garden variety Western materialistic atheist who's kind of atheistic on philosophical or scientific grounds. Then you have your asuras, your atheists who actually see, there's God, there's Krishna, and they want to kill, kill or destroy. So I would think the Satanists kind of come in that category. That they want to, they may even recognize God, but they want to fight God's influence and take the shelter of some big demon and demoniac principle according to their concept. That would be their idea. And then as I said, there's also the description in the Shastra that anyone who considers a demigod to be on the same level of Krishna, sapashandi, Bhavet Dhruvam, that's also an atheist. The Mayavadis are also a kind of atheist, even though they accept there is God. They say there is God, but God has no form, no senses, no pastimes. So that's a kind of atheist. And then there's the Buddhists, who are another kind of atheist. So atheism is a pretty broad category in the Vedic sense, but it also includes these philosophers, like these, the first day we were reading the description of the Vaibha Shaka philosophers, the atomists who just think everything's, that's a actual one of the Vedic philosophies, that there's just atoms and that's it. Yeah?
Can you comment about how they go through realization in negative sense?
nice example is of this famous professor Hawking, he's a cosmology professor.
Mm-hmm.
Hawking. One of his books, he said that his all attempts are to create such a model of creation which will perfectly describe everything about the enemy of God. So he is all the time meditating how to eliminate God.
That's his method. In other words, yeah, there's atheists like that. In other words, instead of like the big demons in Krishna's time who try to kill Krishna with their weapons, and like Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, then you have these modern atheists who try to kill Krishna with their science and their philosophy, basically. Oh, there's others. There's Watson and Crick, who are the two Nobel Prize winning biochemists who discovered the structure of DNA. You know, they're very famous. And we quote them in Origins magazine, how they were saying, like, when we were doing our work, we were thinking we were rewriting the Bible, but without God. He said, before, people used to think, well, these things are so complex that maybe you have to have some intelligent designer, some God doing it, but now we've shown, you don't need that. Of course, they're just bluffing, because they say, "Oh, we've discovered the secret of life," but you ask them to create, even as Prabhupada would do, just hear the chemicals, just make one blade of grass, make an egg, a chicken, make anything, but they can't do that. Okay, we'll have maybe one more comment from Sri Vrindavan. And then we'll go on, because there's some things I want to read today.
Just one side, one definition of atheism. Most people don't follow the Vedic, even accept the Vedic scriptures. They don't follow the Vedic scriptures, as we do Christians.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, what you told me, the Prabhupada said, the Madhavas are better than Christians, but at least they accept the Vedics.
Right.
So in my sense, some past Christians actually accept the Vedic scriptures and there is God. But how is it that better? In Mahabharata, the Prabhupada says it's more offensive because they directly challenge
them.
So why is it that they're
offensive? Well, of course, you'd have to look at the particular statement that Prabhupada was making. He might just be making a general statement, because among the Mayavadis, there are some who are, you could say, it's like the difference between the Maya Aprityagyanas, intelligence stolen by illusion, and then the Asura and Bhava Mashritas, those who are just firmly, offensive and atheistic. It's like we can see in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, when he went to talk to the Mayavadis, Prakashananda, Sarasvati, and others, because they accepted, like the Vedas, he was able to offer them some nice philosophical arguments that they accepted. And they admitted, well, yes, what you say is correct. Actually, we're just following what Sankaracharya says, because he's the leader of our school. Just officially we kind of follow it, but your explanation is actually better. And so because of course, his qualities as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the qualities that he displayed, and also his philosophical arguments based on the Vedas, they became converted. The Mayavadis of Benares, they became converted. So that may be the kind of thing that Srila Prabhupada was talking about, that they will accept arguments based on the Vedas. If they're and of course, these Mayavadis, it said they were also following very strictly, the celibacy and all the rules and regulations, whereas some of the Mayavadis today, they're very grossly sinful, they don't follow these things, they don't, so there's different kinds of Mayavadis. So now I want to just go on to cover some other discussion of these things from the Bhagavad Gita. Let's go to chapter 7, text 24. Now there's a series of verses here going up to these are some ones that I wanted. No, actually, that's not what I wanted. Oh, okay. Yeah, the verse I wanted to go over was actually chapter 9, text 12. And actually, it starts on the previous verse, 9:11. So 9:11 says, Krishna says, "Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be." Then in 9:12, Krishna says, "Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated." Here Krishna's explaining a little bit more the psychology. Because as we see here, he says, those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. So those who just react instinctively when they hear, oh, that God is descended in a personal form, and then they just instinctively react in a very negative way to that. You know, they just think like, oh, well, how can that be? Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. One of the markers that Krishna is giving. Krishna says that people who just instinctively react that way, they become attracted, you know, like to demonic and atheistic views. So there's sort of a, you know, as in many cases we'll see, there's kind of an underlying psychology, some kind of just emotional reaction that people have towards Krishna or God that disposes them to accept like these demoniac and atheistic views. Of course, Srila Prabhupada's purport is very interesting here. It says, "There are many devotees who assume themselves to be in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, but at heart do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, as the absolute truth. For them, the fruit of devotional service going back to Godhead will never be tasted." In other words, we ourselves can be, you know, sort of secret atheists, you know, if we're not. It's a very serious warning. You know, if we go through these things, you know, because we ourselves may be influenced by, you know, some atheistic conception. So I'll just read this again. "There are many devotees who assume themselves to be in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, but at heart do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, as the absolute truth." And eventually it'll come out, you know, eventually it comes out. So for them, the fruit of devotional service going back to Godhead will never be tasted. Similarly, those who are engaged in fruit of pious activities and who are ultimately hoping to be liberated from this material entanglement will never be successful either, because they deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, persons who mock Krishna are to be understood to be demonic or atheistic. Then Srila Prabhupada goes on to say a little bit further in the purport, "As described in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, such demoniac miscreants never surrender to Krishna. So that's the verse we went over yesterday, you know, where you have the Asuram Bhava Mashrita and the Maya Pratijnanas. Those who are atheistic have the atheistic nature of demons, and those whose intelligence is covered by illusion. So therefore, their mental speculations to arrive at the absolute truth bring them to the false conclusion that the ordinary living entity and Krishna are one and the same. With such a false conviction, they think that the body of any human being is now simply covered by material nature, and that as soon as one is liberated from this material body, there is no difference between God and himself. This attempt to become one with Krishna will be baffled because of delusion. Such atheistic and demoniac cultivation of spiritual knowledge is always futile. So this is another variety of atheism. Now, the most extensive description of this phenomenon of atheism is in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, starting on text 8, and we can go there. I mean, Krishna really gets into the whole psychology and practice of the atheist here. So this is text 8. Asatyam apratishtam te jagat ahur anishvaram aparasparasam bhutam kim anyat kamahaitukam. In the translation, they say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. And this is essentially what, you know, the modern scientists are saying. Instead of saying sex and lust, they say chance and chaos, you know, which is, you know, the same thing, you know, ultimately. Because they're not talking about sex according to the regular principles. I think they're talking about the chance combinations. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the demonic conclude that the world is phantasmagoria. There is no cause and effect, no controller, no purpose. Everything is unreal. Which the materialist philosophers will say. They'll say, if you analyze anything, ultimately it's just atoms moving. You know, there's nothing, there's no, we, you know, see different shapes and forms, and but ultimately it's just that. They do not think that the world was created by God for a certain purpose. They have their own theory that the world has come about in its own way and that there is no reason to believe that there is a God behind it. For them, there is no difference between spirit and matter. As I said, sometimes these scientists, they're very tricky people. Because they say, yes, we believe in God, we're very spiritual. But what they mean is God is the universe, God is matter. Yeah, so that's, they're such rascals. You have to, you always have to, you know, when a scientist or philosopher tells you he believes in God, you have to examine a little carefully, you know, what kind of God it is they're talking about. You know, is it a God that you can pray to who will lift Govardhan Hill? And, you know, no, you know, usually they're talking about a God who is just matter unfolding, you know, in a certain way, you know, Big Bang, you know, evolution, all that stuff. For them, there is no difference between spirit and matter, and they do not accept the Supreme Spirit. Everything is matter only, and the whole cosmos is supposed to be a mass of ignorance. According to them, everything is void, and whatever manifestation exists is due to our ignorance and perception. They take it for granted that all manifestation of diversity is a display of ignorance. Just as in a dream, we may create so many things which actually have no existence. So this purport is very instructive, and we can go on and analyze the rest of it. Now, the important thing to understand is that there's some practical results to this philosophy. Because sometimes, all right, people may say, all right, so they believe this, we believe this God. I mean, what difference does it make? It actually makes a big difference. It actually makes a huge difference. Actually, all this hellish economic development that we see all over the world, you know, like, you see it everywhere. You see it here in India, you see it everywhere. But just here in India, some devotees were taking me to a college speaking engagement in Bombay from the Chaupati Temple. It was outside the city. So you just had to go through miles and miles and miles of these industrial slums on the outsides of Bombay, and these just huge roads with all of these masses of people, these huge trucks and buses, and just thousands of them just roaring and roaring, pouring out all these poisonous fumes, and you know, just like a, you know, it's like at night, you know, so just like a scene out of Dante's Inferno or something. And of course, you see the same thing in the United States too. The cars are maybe a little shinier and things like that, but it's just like, you know, driving down the LA freeway. You drive, you know, through these huge oil refineries that are just, you know, like they extend for miles, and they're shooting these huge flames up into the air and things like that. And it's just like such an insane creation. But this all comes from this particular philosophy. So in text 9, Srila Prabhupada says, following such conclusions, the demoniac who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. You know, these points are not just some intellectual game. You know, there's some real results. You know, the world is being made into a very hellish place because of the people who follow these ideas. Because they think the only purpose in life is to exploit matter. There's no spirit, there's no soul. Actually, if people accept it, there's God, there's a soul. Just like Srila Prabhupada said over and over again, the economic problem can be solved very simply. You know, you just grow some food, protect some cows, produce what you need very simply, and then the balance of human life you use for cultivating Krishna consciousness. It can be very nice. The world can be a very nice place. But now it's full of all these ugra karmic activities. So in his purport, Srila Prabhupada says that the demoniac are engaged in activities that will lead the world to destruction. The Lord states here that they are less intelligent. The materialists who have no concept of God think that they are advancing, but according to Bhagavad Gita, they are unintelligent and devoid of all sense. They try to enjoy this material world to the utmost limit and are therefore always engaged in inventing something for sense gratification. Such materialistic inventions are considered to be advancement of human civilization. But the result is that people grow more and more violent and more cruel. Cruel to animals and cruel to other human beings. We can see people are all over the world, they're complaining about, you know, so much crime coming, you know, so much violence. But it comes. It comes from this philosophy. They have no idea how to behave toward one another. Animal killing is very prominent amongst demoniac people. Such people are considered the enemies of the world because ultimately they will invent or create something which will bring destruction to all. Indirectly, this verse anticipates the invention of nuclear weapons of which the whole world today is very proud. So it goes on. Text 10, taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work attracted by the impermanent. Text 11 and 12, they believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. Texts 13 to 15. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. So this is, and it goes on and on. And then in text 19, Krishna tells what happens. Tanaham dvishita kuran samsaresha naradamam shipamya jastram ashubam asurus eva yamshu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Text 20. Attaining repeated birth among the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually, they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. So, this is, of course, is a very interesting purport, explaining how if God is all merciful, he can do this. But this is, so this is a very complete description by Krishna of those, because we see this whole section started out explicitly saying there's a group of people that say there's no God in control, everything's happening by chance, everything is just matter. And then Krishna explains, goes on to explain, all right, what kind of life such people live, what kind of effect it has on the world, and then what happens to such people after the present existence is over. So, of course, also in Bhagavad Gita, we find Krishna is giving some arguments against the idea that there's no soul. And he says, we can actually see that there's a difference between the changing body and the conscious self. Krishna explains that the body goes through different stages, and we can see that. So Krishna gives some arguments against this philosophy as well in Bhagavad Gita. So I think we've about covered this section. There's other verses that we haven't gone over, other verses and purports that you can you can go over some other time, if you want to. But I think we've covered the main points here. We've got non-existence of God as something that Krishna talks about in Bhagavad Gita, and we've kind of seen the psychology of the person who manifests this level of negative God realization, you could call it. They get there by their envy and hatred of God, Ichcha, Dvesha, Samutena, Dvandva, Mohena, Bharata. It was that verse from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, yes, overcome by these dualities of desire and hatred, they come to this position. And the advantage to the person who's at this level, to the person who's following this, they're thinking, well, yes, now I'm by eliminating God, that frees me to be the supreme enjoyer. They think, well, yes, now I'm free. I'm perfect, powerful, happy. There's nobody who can control me. I can do anything I want. But the defect of that is really one can't become happy in that way. As a matter of fact, as Krishna describes in that 16th chapter, they simply become overwhelmed with frustration and anxiety. And they make a mess of the world for everyone else. Plus, they get sent down to the lower species and the hellish planets in their next lives. So it's not a very good position to be in. And then how can that be countered? And that's, as we've seen through our own personal experience and in the teachings of Shastra, we can give logical arguments against their philosophy, and if they're a little bit pious, they'll respond to it. And then they also respond to the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. Of course, in Krishna's own pastime, sometimes Krishna personally kills them and they get liberation, but we're not involved in that business. We're in Lord Chaitanya's movement, and we're not into being merciful in that way. Okay, so are there any final questions or observations, Vedavyas?
You mentioned something about your karma.
Yeah.
I just like to mention something that happened after. I was in the airport in Seattle
Some
years ago, and I saw two older men, maybe close to 60 years old, asking donations, and their sign says, "To build a barn for peace."
Yes. Yes, and governments are taking big donations in the form of tax to do all these things. They take it by the gun. If you don't pay your tax, you know, then you'll be sent to prison. Yeah, with this tax money, they, you know, make all these horrible things meant to destroy the world. Somebody else had a final observation?
I was just going to ask if you had mentioned, I think maybe I must have missed it this call, but if you had mentioned anything that was really important out of this section that was going to be on the test.
Oh, well, I mean the basic points are there. It's going to be your test is. I can't tell you everything that's going to be on the test, but it's going to be, what I'll probably do on the test is, I can't tell you what the test is. But it's not going to be like a multiple choice sort of, you know, thing where, you know, like there's just one fact that you have to know, and if you forget it, you know, you're not going to answer it. It's going to be more of a, you know, there's going to be some writing involved. And you'll have access to your book, to these notes, you know, I'm not going to be on the test, kind of like testing memory so much. What I'm more interested in is like the general sort of principles, you know, that we're going over here. It's not I'm going to ask some, you know, what verse did Krishna, you know, not like that. You'll do all right on the test, don't worry. Begin with a new section today, section 2. So the last couple of days, we were considering how Krishna explains those who oppose the existence of God in Bhagavad Gita. And we could say that that's kind of like a negative level of God realization. So today, we're going to consider something else, and it's those who consider the demons, ghosts, and spirits as supreme. And Krishna talks about these kinds of personalities in Bhagavad Gita. So this is one of the levels of God realization that's described in Bhagavad Gita. And you'll also see, if you look at the world today, you'd have to say they're probably in the world today hundreds of millions of people who are involved in worshiping demons, ghosts, and spirits as their primary mode of religion. This is happening in what you might call the tribal areas of India and Africa and other parts of the world. And then also in the developed countries, you still have this kind of thing going on. It's an actual phenomenon, and it's actually described in Bhagavad Gita as a level of God realization, a very low level. It's a manifestation of religion in the mode of ignorance and sometimes passion. And, you know, I myself went through quite a few different stages before I became a devotee. I was explaining my atheistic period. So I think I also had a period of ghost and demon worship. Because I had become frustrated with atheism. And I was actually living in Florida at the time. And I had become a little bit acquainted with, and you know, in the southern United States, there's still vestiges of this, you call it voodoo worship and things like that. So I actually began studying it a little myself, just reading different books about it. And you actually hear kind of reflections of it in popular music too. You know, if you listen to the, you know, the rock and roll songs of those days, you know, you find a lot of references to this sort of thing. And actually, I decided I was going to go to Haiti and learn it. You know, for the various reasons. You know, I wanted to, you know, get higher powers and destroy my enemies and, you know, do things like that. So I actually got as far as, you know, I never actually went to Haiti. So, as with so many things, I never really completed them or completely followed through on it. But I did go to the Bahamas, and actually I was in a harbor in the Bahamas, and you know, I was standing. There was a boat, you know, just ready to go to Haiti. You know, a small inter-island boat, and I had this habit I developed of doing things on instinct or feeling, you know, like, you know, I just think and contemplate, well, should I or shouldn't I? And if I felt like doing it, then I would, and if I didn't, then I wouldn't. So I decided, no, I don't think I'll get on the boat and go to Haiti and learn that. Probably a good thing. But, and then also, you know, we're going to read in a purport that a demon also includes human beings, just like we're going to hear in one of the purports to the verses we're going to consider, how Srila Prabhupada explained that in Calcutta during World War II, there was a businessman, Indian businessman, who would actually worship Hitler. You know, because of the money, because of the war, he was making so much money in the black market, he decided to worship Hitler. Yeah. He still worships. Oh, there's somebody still worshiping Hitler in Calcutta. You've seen it. You personally seen, or you've heard?
No, somebody just told me.
Somebody just told you. So, and actually at one point, there is a tendency, you know, to worship powerful people in society. I think at one point I'd also decide to worship Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones.
Because I was saying, oh, they were controlling, you know, so many people. See, that was even after I found out a little bit about Krishna consciousness, and then I understood, you know, you could worship, you know, Krishna and Brahma, and you'd get results. So I actually decided, you know, I had a, you know, like a picture, and I would offer, you know, well, because, you know, you think you might get results in terms of material sense gratification very quickly. Yeah, like that. You know, by worshiping the gods of... right, like that. But you see, Srila Prabhupada says that these things are done. You know, people actually will worship powerful... And even though they may not do it directly in terms of puja, you know, there is this kind of hero worship that goes on in, you know, material society, you know, like people, I mean, it's even though people may not consciously think, you know, that they're worshiping, you know, say, powerful people in society, like politicians and entertainers and stuff like that, it amounts to the same kind of thing. You know, they put their pictures on the wall and, you know, they offer money to them, they go and see them, they, when they come, they almost have like kirtan for them or something, you know, they're there, they're cheering, they're